Join us Saturday, November 5th, 2022 for our favorite event of the year, Extra Life, where we stream video games for 24 hours to raise money for kids in need.
This year, we'll be streaming a wide variety of games, including Crash Team Racing, Killer Queen Black, Multiverses, Rock Band, and a whole lot more.
We also have lots of exciting incentives and milestones set up. Every time you donate, you can cause shenanigans on stream or enter in for a chance to win some of our amazing prizes.
All proceeds will benefit the Janet Weiss Children's Hospital at Geisinger.
We hope you come out and hang out with us as we help the big, beautiful kids of Geisinger.
But until then,
we'll see you in the future. Welcome back, everybody, to another exciting episode of Cast to the Past, where we are born of the blood and made men by the blood. My name is Josh.
I don't know what I'm supposed to do based off that. I'm Tom.
Yes, and today we are going to be talking about Bloodborne.
Are we going to have a bloody good time?
Oh, bloody good time. This is an episode that I've been excited to talk about because this is our first From Software game, too, that we're talking about.
Excuse me, have you already forgotten about Metal Wolf Chaos?
Yes, I forgot about Chaos. I'm sorry. I am so sorry.
You killed Chaos.
We did. Yes, we did. But this is our first traditional Souls game, I should say, then.
Sure, sure. The Soulsborne ring.
And this is where you get the born out of it.
Sekiro. How do you fit that in there? The Sekiro Souls Born Ring
yes,
franchise.
Yes.
Boring.
No. Yeah, today we're going to be talking about Elden. No.
No, not for a couple years.
Yep. Now, today we're going to be talking about Bloodborne, which is one of my favorite games of all time. So we're going to figure out where it places in my ranking at the end of this episode here. But this is a continuation of Spooky Games Month, and with the spookiest time of the year, let's head to Yharnam.
All right.
But before we go to Yharnam, Tom, we need to know about that nitty gritty.
Oh.
And the most evil man of all time.
Hidetaka Miyazaki. The evil Miyazaki.
Miyazaki. Yeah, not the Studio Ghibli.
There's a good Miyazaki and an evil Miyazaki. This is the evil one. Developed by From Software, published by Sony Computer Entertainment, exclusively for the PlayStation 4, and released in America on March 24th, 2015, and Japan 2 days later on the 26th.
Let me just put a pin right there.
Actually, it was released. Oh, what's up?
Let me put a pin right there really quick.
Sure.
Came out March 24th, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those perfect releases because March is a dead time of the year for gaming.
Okay.
Right. And you start to notice now a lot of games are starting to come out in that January, February, March timeframe because it's a dead time of the year. So like what's people going to be doing besides sitting inside? What are you going to do? Play another round of Call of Duty? That sounds boring as hell. You know, this was that time. And when this game came out, it took off. It took off because of that time of the year. Like there was nothing else out there to compete against it. But we'll talk more about that then.
I mean, I do remember a lot of people talking about this. You and our one friend of the show, especially, you guys wouldn't shut up about it. You know, another of the Souls games, super hard games that Miyazaki says were kind of inspired by the old school style of playing where you had to figure out a lot more things on your own and learn from your mistakes and memorize patterns. This continued his tradition. So this is what's the order of release at this point by 2015?
Demon's Souls, Dark Souls 1, Dark Souls 2. What year did this come out?
2015. Dark Souls 3 was 2017, wasn't
okay,
it?
Okay, yeah. So then it was Demon's Souls, Dark Souls 1, Dark Souls 2, then Bloodborne, Dark Souls 3, Sekiro, Elden Ring.
Okay, there you go. Quite a pedigree of punishing games right there.
One, potentially two Game of the Year contenders.
Mm. Well, we'll find out more about that. But for now, I want to find out about, let's go to Soulsborne Origin Mode.
Oh, okay. So yeah, it took place. I mean, there's actually a great video on this one website that talks about the very first Souls game that ever was released. That was Legend of Zelda 2.
Yeah, you can find that on the YouTube channel called Bad Elephant Gaming. Mm.
Yeah.
No, it's a great video that Josh put together. But how much do you know about Miyazaki as a developer?
I know that he is a very evil man.
Well, he actually kind of has a little bit of a sympathetic origin story that I'm going to go over right
Wow.
Now.
Who would have thought?
So I learned this in an interview that he gave to The Guardian around the time of Bloodborne's release.
And let's just talk about that, because Miyazaki doesn't do a lot of interviews.
Mm-hmm, but
he's a very private man.
Yeah, but I guess he was proud enough of this game to talk about it. He said that he had trouble reading as a child. Often he'd reach passages of text he couldn't understand, and so he would allow his imagination to fill in the blanks using illustrations to come up with the story on his own. So I feel like that's one of the most telling things about this man's gameplay style that can be said, because Josh, how is story handled in almost all of his games?
It's all handled through lore and text-based items. It's so vague. It is some of the most vague lore that you can get in any type of video game.
He also had kind of an unconventional path towards, you know, designing games in and of themselves. So in another interview that I got from IGN around the time of this, he said, growing up, I was restricted at home from playing video games until I reached university. So when I'm asked what my favorite game is, this is the reason I stumble. There was a board game called Sorcery, which is one of my favorites, and I would often revisit the game. It's not a video game, but it definitely stands out in my mind as a game that impacted me. I've been a fan of Dungeons and Dragons, and for them to have come this far is very meaningful to me. So he basically got his entire RPG and, you know, fantasy pedigree from tabletop games, which you heavily see impacted in all of the Soulsborne games, because they lean so heavily into stats and buffs.
I mean, it's like Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you have to pay very particular attention to how weapons scale, what their attributes are, you know, and that's all bread and butter of the tabletop genre. So why did this come out on the PS4? Do you know any background on
it? I don't know why it was exclusive to the PlayStation 4. I don't know if they had some sort of a contract where they had to make a game for it. Because Demon's Souls was exclusive to the PlayStation 3.
Mm-hmm. So I have a little bit of info on that for you as well.
Okay.
So Miyazaki said in an interview with GameSpot that this was only possible on the PlayStation 4. I always wanted to make a game set in the Victorian era, but to make it look good with all the clothing and architecture, it required a console more powerful than the ones that were around. The arrival of the PS4 finally gave us that. Bloodborne isn't a game that could have been cross-generation. It was only possible on the PS4.
You know what's really weird about that?
Hmm.
Everyone's clamoring for Bloodborne to come out on PC. It had to come out on the consoles because the console was more powerful.
Well, there you go. The creator himself said it. Consoles are better.
Gotchas.
And I think the inspirations are very clear within every section of the game.
Yeah.
What would you say? What would you guess the inspirations were?
H.R. Giger.
What else?
Lovecraft.
What else? Another big one.
There's another big one. Willy Wonka.
Try blood. Dracula. No, heavy Dracula and all that kind of gothic.
Yeah,
fiction.
You can tell Bram Stoker's Dracula really played a key role into that era. Like, it feels like you are in an alternate version of that 1800s London, England,
sure,
style. Look.
Sure, Jack the Ripper, Industrial Revolution era. Sure, sure, sure. So Josh, what kind of gameplay can you experience in Bloodborne?
Live, die, repeat.
Oh, so it's the Tom Cruise movie.
Yes.
I didn't know Tom Cruise was in this. Damn, I missed him.
Emily Blunt's in there too. She's the one that you killed. You attacked that one time when you were playing blindfolded.
Oh, well, we'll get into that. But
I mean, it is just a traditional Souls game. It's a third person hack and slash, but it's more strategic hack and slash rather than just go in there and just swing away. You have your magic abilities, unlike Dark Souls, where it is an entire class that you would actually go ahead and level up. There are attributes that will make your magic a little bit stronger, but they are used as items in the game rather than spells or incantations that you would normally get.
But a big thing in this, Josh, they're guns.
Yes, the visceral attacks. The guns are actually going to be your way of parrying enemies in the game. Rather than you using a shield or using your sword to block an attack, you are given a pistol or a rifle or any of, like, a cannon at one point in time.
Hand cannon.
Yeah, hand cannon. You are given these items to, when an enemy goes to attack you, if you actually shoot them, you can stun them and then go up and do a visceral attack or a critical attack as well.
And parrying, yeah, that was very interesting to get down. They do give you several kind of boss and major enemy encounters early where their parrying is kind of obvious, their patterns. Mm-hmm. So it really they do try to ease you into it to a degree and say, all right, this is what's expected now.
And let's talk about the visceral attacks too. Normally it's just like you run up and you'll just stab somebody in an animation thing. No, your character like sticks their hand inside their chest and then like rips it out and then just blood's everywhere. There's so much blood in this game.
Interesting. It's almost like it's in the title.
Yeah, exactly. So much blood.
Exactly. But world design. So this goes with the almost Metroidvania, you know, like giant linear but interconnected areas where, you know, you might get to the end of a long corridor and realize there's an option to double back to where you started. Mm-hmm. And that kind of becomes an easy shortcut for the next time you pass through. Areas can lead you back to other areas, or you can find shortcuts to future areas. What did you think about the design of Yharnam and its surrounding areas?
So with all Souls games, like the level design is just mastery. Like it is so good every single time, you know, going through and, you know, playing this and you're like, you're walking around on like a balcony, but you see like a breakable box or crate or something like that. And you do that and then you're going to fall down and end up in a completely different area. But then when you're done in that area, you walk out and then you're like, oh shit, I was here like 4 hours ago. Like, how is this even possible? Like, it's so crazy and how intertwined everything is. And that goes all the way back to, you know, Demon Souls, but Dark Souls 1, I think, is the one that started that perfection of it. You know, even going up to Elden Ring nowadays, right? You know, you're talking about going to the Altus Plateau. There's four different ways you can get to the Altus Plateau. Like, it's insane what you can do and how you can get to all of these places.
I find the world design of Bloodborne to be a little too linear. It feels like I'm just being funneled. Mm-hmm. And it makes it very, like, so you talk about Elden Ring. The thing about Elden Ring that eased me in compared to a lot of other the Soulsborne games is that, like, you very rarely run into brick walls the way you can run into in games like this. Because in Bloodborne, you know, like, if you get to an enemy that's blocking the critical path, it's like, fuck you, come back whenever you're good enough. But the thing is, there may not be that many opportunities to get better except through like grinding a lot of really small guys until you're stronger. But Elden Ring, if you get to a boss that's level A, you can go kill a bunch of level B bosses that you find throughout until your stats are better, and then you can come back and handle the level A boss. But that's the future of the franchise. I'm comparing through hindsight, but no, it's the best way I can explain what bothers me about Bloodborne is that like there's just a lot of impediments at points because of how the worlds are designed.
You know? I completely get you, and I completely understand. I will say Bloodborne is a great starting off point for a lot of people to the Souls franchise because it is probably the most welcoming of all of the games. When I say like most welcoming, it is not a traditional style Souls game where it's not be super on the defense about everything. Bloodborne is more of an arcade style Souls game than your traditional Dark Souls, Elden Ring, Demon Souls, stuff like that. And that's the thing. I completely understand, like you're saying, it's so linear. And I feel like that's by design for this game because of it trying to be welcoming to everybody. You know, you figure this is an exclusive title for the PlayStation 4, so you need to make this as accessible to more people than normal, right? You don't have those fans on the PC. You don't have those fans on the Xbox. You don't have those fans on the Switch. Like, this is what we got. You got the PlayStation crowd, so you got to make sure that you're going to blanket an entire group of people on the PlayStation side.
I feel like a thing that is true about the Soulsborne franchise is that even if things get kind of refreshed or changed, there is a core similar thing. Like flasks versus canisters versus
blood vials,
whatever you want to call them.
Yep.
Souls versus blood.
Echoes,
you know, like go over all these with us real quick.
Yep.
Pretend I've never played any of these.
Okay. So you start off, you get your gun and you get your sword, or whatever weapon you decide to do. The sword has two different modes to it, unlike a lot of other Dark Souls games. Where
and by sword in this game, you mean like the meat cleaver thing on the box art.
Yep. The reason I say sword is because one of the best weapons in the game is a sword itself. Oh, okay. But yeah, so you get the meat cleaver, you get a scythe. Like I said, you get the guns, hand cannons, In Dark Souls, you normally have, you can one or two hand a lot of weapons. You can do that in Bloodborne as well, but the big thing with two handing a weapon is it transforms the weapon. You know, with having like the alternative moves of a weapon, like you might have your cleaver turn into a scythe, or your little sword that gets sheathed on your back, you actually attach it to your back and then you pull it out and it's a giant sword then. Mm. So like there's so many different combinations that you can get. We talk about the differences between the flask that you would get in Dark Souls or Elden Ring or whatnot mixed with the blood vials. Blood vials are your health item inside the game that you collect by just killing people. You collect them to the point where you just kind of inject it into your leg like an EpiPen, and then you are getting your health back, right? You have bullets that you can actually use your health to generate more bullets, or you can pick up bullets throughout the world as well. Your gun takes the place of the shield that you would normally have in a Souls game. Fun fact is there is a shield. There's a shield in Bloodborne. However, if you pick it up and read the description, it practically says that it is useless in this world.
It's like, why did you do that? Yeah.
And it's just a nice little nod to Dark Souls itself. It's like, listen, like, Here you go. Here's something a little fun here. And
sure, but what are you keeping an eye on in terms of like the HUD and things that upgrade your stats? Like in this game, obviously you have health and stamina.
Yep.
Do you have mind? You have focus points in this too. Yep. Yeah. So there's the three bars, red, blue, green.
Yep. So, and then you have, you know, in order to spend those, you need to use blood echoes, which is this game's equivalent to souls.
Or runes.
Or ruins. Yep. Yeah. Overall, it's the same, but different. And that's what a good sequel or a good spinoff needs to be. It needs to be the same, but different. And that's something I don't think a lot of companies do. They try to change it up way too much, and it can ruin a franchise or it can ruin a company because you did such drastic change in such a short time frame, where every single one of these games that they make is the same, but different in a way.
All right, we know how to play the game. Let's talk about the story of Bloodborne, i.e. the part where Josh goes off.
Yeah.
Let me try to encapsulate it as best I can. So you wake up and...
Yep.
So here's the thing. You start Bloodborne and you wake up on an operating table. And this old man is like, oh, you little boy, I'm going to do some
Garum.
Some blood stuff to you. You can tell me his name, but the game does not tell you his name.
I know.
He's like, oh, I'm going to put some blood in you.
And then
you fall asleep and then you wake up and some creepy crawly thing crawls all over you.
They suck your face off.
And then you finally wake up again.
Yep.
In an abandoned old house.
Yep.
And this werewolf attacks you.
Yep.
And you die. And that's the end of the game. Thanks for that. No.
Ba-da-ba-da-ba-ba.
So what does this death bring about, Josh?
This death sends you to the Hunter's Dream. And in the Hunter's Dream, that's where you are given your weapons. Kind of like your hub area where you're going to actually go and you're going to teleport to some of your lanterns that you have. Lanterns replacing...
Lost Grace, and
Grace,
campfires,
all that kind of stuff. Yes, but you have like nice little lanterns that are there.
It's a safe haven, with what like basically.
Sure, we'll call it a safe haven. The Hunter's Dream is the place where you can kind of go, and you'll be able to level up. You'll be able to buy items. You'll be able to fortify your weapons and make them stronger. You'll be able to add perks to your character. You'll be able to advance some quest lines there as well. You can put little top hats on the little crazy guys.
Gargoyles.
The little things that sucked you off at the beginning of the game. So you go back into the world of Yharnam and you...
Well, who gives you... Hold on. When you go to the Hunter's Dream the first time, you meet some people too. Who do you meet? You don't interact with anybody the first time?
Nope.
It's empty?
Yep.
Okay, I guess
because you need insight.
We'll give us some insight into this game.
Okay,
Josh, go ahead.
So as you know,
I'm over here questioning Josh on Bloodborne.
I know. I'm so garbage at this. Now I want to let you guys know. There's a nice little disclaimer before this. I am not Vati Vidya, so I will not be able to give you the entire story. I'm going to give you the best cliff notes that I can.
The biff notes
that I can to get. As a callback to the last episode. We wake up and it is the night of the Great Hunt. The Great Hunt is these beasts are out there in the world and there are hunters. as we like to call them, the hunters, are out there to destroy these beasts. The thing is, though, people don't like hunters, which is weird because these are the beasts. These people are going to kill the beasts that are actually causing all the terror to the world. But that's besides the point. Nobody likes
this shit beforehand.
It seems that way.
So it looks like, you know, it's industrial era London, but it looks like the plague hit it.
I mean, think about when you go to Old Yharnam. Right?
Even shittier.
Yep. Old Yharnam, but like it's a town that has just been forgotten. It is just like, listen, shit hit the fan here. There's no turning back. Just let the beast run. It's Jurassic Park, practically.
Okay. I was just curious if like the Night of the Hunt was the cause of all the griminess and the ugliness, no, but no.
From what I know, this is like, it's like kind of like the Purge type thing. Is like the Night of the Hunt comes and everybody is trying to stay safe and the hunters are out there to protect it. Actually, I think the launch trailer to this that explains the hunt itself and what the hunters do. So if you ever watched it, you know, maybe Tom, you put that launch trailer right here. You make your way throughout Yharnam and then you stumble upon your first boss, and that was the Cleric Beast. Which is terrifying the first time you see it.
Big squiddly widdly boy.
Yeah, it's a lot of fur, a lot of blood, and it just like you see it coming over this like cathedral almost, and it's like, and then it just lands in front of you, and it's an epic fight. And chances are you're probably going to die.
Oh,
and
I did.
Yeah, when you die there though, that's when you get your insight. And what insight is in this world is very similar to your humanity in Dark Souls, where it can change the course of the world and change the course of the game. The more insight that you have, the more things you start to see in this world that you wasn't there before. And that's, I think, a great piece to this game, where it is the game's constantly changing. And if you're not paying attention to it, it could surprise you, like different enemies in certain areas, things climbing on walls. It kind of messes with your mind. But the more insight that you have, the more you get to see the real world. And that's what I think's crazy about the game, is everything you see when you first start off is just an illusion of this world. And that plays into a big twist towards the end of this game. I would say the 75% part of the way of this game that I love. But you get your first insight from dying. And you are greeted then by the doll of the hunter's dream.
Sentient real doll.
Yep.
And
yep.
She...
It's very similar to Ronnie without the extra arms.
I thought she was similar to Melina, your maiden.
Okay,
maiden,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because she serves the same function. She's like the embodiment of your stat upgrade.
I was just thinking a doll because Ronnie was a doll.
Oh, spoilers. I didn't know that.
She says that the first time you meet her.
I thought Ronnie was real. Well, what am I doing all this work
for? She is real. She put her body into a doll. Her consciousness.
So she's putting up barriers between us. I'm not really connecting with her.
Yeah.
And
then when you go inside of the little house that's in the hunter's dream, and that's where you meet Garum. He is an old hunter man who has been kind of...
He's like the last of the hunters, isn't he?
Yeah. He's one of the last, because you have Father Gascoigne, who is also one. You have, I forget her name, damn it, the crow lady, who is also another hunter, but she's a hunter of hunters.
A hunter.
And then you got the guy in Old Yharnam. There are hunters throughout this world, both good and bad, and you can tell that the world is infecting these people. You meet Garum. He's confined to a wheelchair. He's pretty much telling you, you know, about the world and stuff like that. At one point in time, he tells you that you can have sex with the doll if you want. That's a thing.
And he's like, I do it.
Yeah.
Just clean her up when you're done. Actual lines from
Blood. I know, Blood. It is. That was a cringe moment in the game, but... I get what they were.
What
going.
Do you mean you get?
I know, like, I get. Like, it's this world that has gone to shit, and like Garum's like, I'm making the most of it. Because there is a scene, one time when you go back to the Hunter's Dream, Garum's not in the spot that he was in.
Because he was busy before he got there.
No, he was not. No, he's actually towards the back part of the Hunter's Dream where he's sleeping. But as he's sleeping, he's having a nightmare and he's discussing the real world inside that dream that he's having, the nightmare that he's having. So it's like you can see that he's confined to this area. So he's trying to make the most of everything that he can inside the hunter's dream, okay. Which is like, whoa, okay. Like, it's like he's trapped here is pretty much what he's getting at. So
also, unlike Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, there is no sex mini game. So you like he promises you you can bone the doll.
You can't.
But because the doll did not make a polite boning request, yep. You cannot have sex yep. with the doll.
I mean, we're just being respectful.
Yeah, you know.
Right? This guy's like, just go do it. And like, we're like, no, hold on. Whoa. No.
I'll wait for a PBR and then yeah, I'll do
exactly.
it.
So the world of Yharnam, we talk about the Great Hunt, but let's dive a little bit more into the actual lore of this. You have two people that are the cause of all of this stuff here. You have Master Willem and I can't remember the other guy's name. Master Willem, though, he was the one that pretty much said that the world is based around blood. Blood is going to make people better. Blood is going like it's the whole research that he's been doing and all of his like his time has been put into learning about what the blood does.
Okay. So like bloodletting? You mean like the thing that killed George Washington?
No.
Fun fact, George Washington died. Is not around anymore.
He's still not around, no.
But no, so he got a cold. And so he believed in bloodletting. So he just let his doctors drain blood from his body, but he drained too much and he died. So if he had just taken a nap.
I'm going to get some of it wrong, but I don't want to get.
Well, I'll tell you what, Josh, you just tell me the general kind of goings on of Bloodborne. And if you get some stuff wrong, great. People will be able to yell at their podcast.
That's true. Go. People will be able to actually comment on our videos.
There you go.
Right. So Master Willem was the one who Lawrence, that was it. You got Lawrence and Master Williams. They were working together on understanding and researching the blood. And one wanted to use the blood for good. The other one wanted to do other things with the blood. That's where you can start to see people who have been taking the blood has started to go crazy and started to turn into beasts and started to turn into monsters and stuff like that. And
so it's corrupting people because they created the bad blood or they were studying the bad blood?
Yeah, they're extracting the old blood.
Where did the old blood come from?
That's parts that I can't remember.
But it's Miyazaki. So just Josh, tell us where it came from.
Oh, it came from the read the item description.
No. Just tell it. You're allowed to fill in the blanks. Yeah. He said. Oh. So where did it come from?
Oh, I mean, so the old blood came from just really old people.
I think, right? It came from old leeches. You know, like sometimes leeches, after they go to college, they have kids and they get jobs they don't like. And then they get old and they're sad and they have regrets. Mm-hmm. So their blood turns bad. And that's where the bad blood
regrets.
Comes from.
It's all about the regrets.
No, leeches.
The leeches. Well, I'm saying the regrets lead to the leeches, lead to the old blood.
Okay. We're going to get comments. Now.
I know. I love it. The blood has kind of taken over a lot of people and made people evil and corrupted them. You see that with Father Gascoigne, who ends up killing his wife, and then
and then he sees you and he's just like, fuck you.
I'm gonna take you out too.
Yeah.
But then you can see there's certain things that are happening throughout the world. People are not who they say they are. People are being manipulative. There are some good in the world, but it's very few and far between. So let's go into, we talked about the cleric beast. We got Father Gascoigne. Then we're going to go to the blood-starved beast, which is this giant poisonous monster type thing that fucking sucks. It's still one of my least favorite boss fights in the whole game because it's just so difficult.
So here's a fun fact of the blood-starved beast. Mm-hmm. So I played this game for the first time on stream on twitch.tv/badelephantgaming because Josh, part of our Extra Life rewards last year was Josh asked me to stream this. And one night he encouraged me to play with people to get a sense of the multiplayer. So I played with our good buddy Jake from Welcome to Game Corp. And he killed the blood-starved beast for me in like 3 hits.
Yep.
And it was really funny because I walk into... Josh didn't realize I was multiplaying. And so I walk into the cathedral that it's in and Josh is like, oh, here we go, Tom. This is the best boss fight in the game. And then it's dead. And he's like, wait, what happened? And I was like, oh, Jake did it for me.
It's seriously like one of the worst boss fights. Okay, so it's not the worst As in bad, like it's the worst, as in like difficult. Like
sure.
If you don't know the trick behind
sure.
It.
Okay.
Then you got Vicar Amelia. Mm-hmm. So she was the dog lady hanging from the ceiling
in that big cathedral. Yep. A lot of cathedrals in the
city. Yep. Use fire. Just use fire and you'll take her out pretty easily. Then you get my least favorite boss, which was the witch. I think the witches were the worst part of the game. I think it was just it's a gimmick boss fight and it's just not fun. In general, Amidala, Queen Amidala, who is the brain monster thing that's over in the thing is, there's two different worlds in this game. You got Yharnam, and then you have like this dream world that's happening.
Yes.
And there's a boss in this game called, and I got to go right into it because it's going to explain a little bit more. There's a boss called Rom, the vacuous spider. He's this big slug looking monster type thing. And after you finally meet Master Willem doesn't say anything. He just points to the water and you're supposed to jump off of this pier into the water and it takes you to this dream world. Once you kill Rom, you realize you fucked up because Rom was the creature that was giving the illusion that the world was perfect. The world was fine.
It's like you turn the matrix off.
Yes.
And everyone woke up.
You hit the kill switch because once that happens, the world changes for the worse. Some of your most toughest enemies are coming. You go up against a giant like skeleton human centipede type thing because it's like these are like caskets with like arms and legs that are coming after you now. Like the world is terrible. You see like bosses that you fought originally are like clinging to the sides of the buildings and stuff like that. Like the world is awful.
The world
horrible.
Is a vampire.
Sent the drain. But killing Rom, you pretty much stop, like you change the world. You make the world, you let everybody see what's actually been hiding there in front of you the whole time. From doing that, you are able to go to particular areas that you weren't able to go to prior. And one of my favorite pieces to this, though, is with that happening, that's going to start the transition towards the end of the game. I recommend, if you can, get the umbilical cords. There's technically four, but you only need three of them. One third umbilical cords. And these umbilical cords are from a great being. And these great beings have, they're like pretty much gods. And if you consume three of them, that gives you the best ending of the game. But you can find these inside of a fetus that is inside of a woman who gives birth to it. She gives birth to this demon baby that has one of the umbilical cords attached to her. Or there's a person who has been doing experiments inside of a ransacked hospital type thing where she consumed one of them and it was eating her and turning her evil from the inside out. Or you're fighting a wet nurse demon who is protecting this baby, and at the end of protecting the baby you get the umbilical cord once you defeat the wet nurse. Like these things,
it's a lot of stem cell research in this game.
This game is very dark, I think it's probably the most violent of all of the Souls games.
I mean, right, just from its imagery and a lot of the basic settings alone, it invites that. Yeah.
You know, consuming that, you get to fight one of the great moon presence is what they're called. Making your way through, you know, going to dreams and going to nightmare worlds and just exploring just this god-awful monstrosity of a world that Miyazaki has created, you are then given the choice at the very end to fight Garum or to surrender to him. Because Garum wasn't who he said he was the whole time. Garum was actually probably the greatest hunter to ever live. And he didn't really need the wheelchair that he was in because he gets up and he will fuck your day up if you're not good at parrying. And I know I left out a lot of stuff. I really did want to leave out a lot of things just so you guys can go and experience just what this world has. Like, I'm not talking about the giant brains. I'm not talking about what are they called in Dungeons and Dragons? Mind flares. Mm. We're not talking about mind flares. We're not talking about the giants. We're not talking about any of that kind of stuff.
But in essence, you are somebody that brings down a system that's controlling the world and preventing it from being actually good again.
Yep.
And in doing so, you find out that somebody you thought who was on your side in this is actually responsible for the
system. He wants to keep the world the way that it is.
There you go.
Okay. And you have the ability to, like I said, surrender. By surrendering, he kills you. You can fight him and kill him. And then if you consume the three umbilical cords, you actually have to fight the great moon presence at the end. And by doing that, you turn in to one of the great moon presences, which is going to make the world better then.
It's crazy how this has the same plot as Don't Worry, Darling. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I have no idea. I've never...
Am I joking?
I don't know.
But
fantastic story, fantastic writing. The lore is, you know, it is one of the best that Miyazaki has ever created. And I think just the atmosphere of this world itself is unmatched when it comes to a lot of games.
God, this game. But Josh, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Did you find any of that out in game, or did you learn that through YouTube?
So I was maybe 50-50.
Okay.
So because of how much I enjoyed the world, very rarely do I ever read the descriptions of things and dive deeper into that. I wanted to know as much as I possibly could. I was like, I think I understand part of this. It's very similar to a couple weeks ago, I went to Vegas and we went to see a Cirque du Soleil show. And we're sitting there and I'm like, I think I know the story. I think I figured out the story. And like, it's so vague. There's no words. There's no nothing. It's all up to interpretation. But I'm like, I think I figured out the story. And the same thing with Bloodborne is, I think I figured out where this was. Let me go and do my research, and then let me watch somebody who's actually put hundreds of hours into research and make, see, you know, cross-examine to see who's right and who's wrong. And like I said, I 50-50, I would say. Okay. I understood a lot of it, but then there was a lot that I was like, oh, that makes sense.
I don't know if you know this.
Mm-hmm.
I think you know this, and I don't mean to upset you, but I did not finish Bloodborne.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Okay.
I look at your achievements, your trophies.
Oh, so you know I haven't beaten Elden Ring yet. Yeah.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
creep on all my Jesus.
Yeah. When I sit there and I see that I have the platinum trophy for both of those games, and I see there and I'm like, well, Tom's still in he's still didn't do that thing. Okay. All right. That's cool. But it leads up to these moments.
I figured he knew.
Yeah.
But just hearing, oh yeah, I creep on your trophies.
Yeah.
That's one of the most hilarious. Oh God, I love you. Anyway, so I did not finish Bloodborne.
Mm-hmm.
I'm being very frank. The reason I didn't finish Bloodborne is that I very quickly lost interest because I didn't understand why I was supposed to be caring about all the effort I was being asked to put into this adventure.
Yes.
Like, there are video games that you play just for the skill-based fun of it.
Yep.
You know, I know there's a somewhat of a plot to Pac-Man, but I don't need or care about lore in Pac-Man.
Right.
But the thing is, this game lost me really quickly because it throws so much shit at you, but its stakes are so vague.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, after a while, kind of was like, I just am not compelled enough to want to keep going. Everything that you described, most of it I didn't know, but it sounded really cool and really interesting. But it's just kind of like, as you said, the game doesn't even give that all to you. You kind of have to go do homework after you play the game. And to me, I don't always have the patience or the interest in that. Like, if I get hooked on something well enough, sure, I love diving into fan communities and exploring, but I don't like doing that as like a kind of alternative to the, like, I see nothing wrong with Miyazaki's game design philosophy.
Yeah.
I'm not calling it invalid.
Nope.
I'm just saying, for me, it's kind of like the beauty of Elden Ring, which I'm playing right now, is that probably through his partnership with George R.R. Martin, there is a very direct but simple fantasy story.
Mm-hmm.
Magical MacGuffin that ruined the world.
Yes.
We understand how important it is, and your quest is to go make things right. And as I'm playing Elden Ring, even though there's still a lot of vagueness to it, I'm like, I know what I'm doing at the core of this, though. I'm on an adventure to save the world from the destroyed MacGuffin. You know what I mean? Bloodborne didn't have any of that. And so I kind of just was like, why am I getting this stressed and angry at this game? I don't even know what I'm fighting for, you know?
Well,
go ahead.
I highly recommend, maybe after we're done recording this, we can sit down and watch it later tonight. We'll watch the Vativedia lore of Bloodborne, and you can see just how fucking great this story is.
Okay.
there's a reason that Bloodborne isn't a top five game of all time for me. And it's the world, the lore, the gameplay, everything matches and works. The music is so damn good. The characters are, you know, I'm so invested in every character. I've done every side quest. I've beaten every boss. I've done so much. Even the Chalice Dungeons, which I haven't even talked about the Chalice Dungeons
yet. Well, let's talk about them real quick, because the Chalice Dungeons I actually liked. I thought they were fun because of Souls games don't get called roguelikes enough, do they?
No.
Which I kind of think sometimes they should in certain areas, but like the Chalice Dungeons are, I think, a roguelike component to it. You find chalices throughout the game, and what do you have? Please remind me, what do you have to fill them with to get...
You put them on the
there's pedestals in the Hunter's Dream.
Yeah, there's like little graves that you would do.
Okay.
And those chalices being activated on certain ones will actually send you to a particular chalice dungeon where you can fight bosses that you've never fought before. One of them, you fight the queen, or you fight the Bloodstarred Beasts, but it's a different type of, like, you're fighting alternative versions of these creatures. I will say that the chalice dungeons were my least favorite part of the game.
Why didn't you like
that? I think they're just too repetitive. After a while, you start to see that they're all the same. They're just randomly generated. It's like, it gets a little boring, especially because...
That's crazy to me, because you like roguelikes.
It got a little too repetitive and boring because I was just doing them to get the final trophy, which is you have to get the last chalice dungeon to fight a particular enemy to get a particular item.
Okay.
That... It was just constantly doing it because you have to do like 7 or 8, I think. And they're all super long. They're all almost the same exact rooms. And then you get to the end and it's some shitty boss fight. And then you get kicked back to the beginning of the Chalice Dungeon.
Okay.
Like, son of a bitch. But yeah, there's so much in this game, like I said, I haven't talked about. And it's really because I want you, the listener slash viewer, to experience a lot of this yourself, if you can. If not, watch the Vati video thing, understand the lore, and maybe, you know, buy a PlayStation 4 or PlayStation 5. It's free.
Buy a PS4 because that's all you can get right now.
Yeah, I know. But it is free with the PlayStation Plus membership. You can download it. Even the DLC that goes deeper into the lore is crazy.
So to talk about the DLC, let's try to get into like the post-release
the
attitude.
Old Hunters.
Things. Yeah, the Old Hunters. So this obviously released to critical acclaim. People were eating it up. Critics love this. Fans love this. People complained about it eating an easy mode. Other people told those people to get good. It's the Souls release cycle.
Every Souls game has that same exact mentality of, it's too difficult. Well, get good. Yeah. I mean, that was a big thing with Sekiro. I think Elden Ring's probably like the easiest of all of them. Because
which
you have
is
to
why,
jump,
which is
you
why
have
I'm jump. Almost done. There
yeah, you
go.
Have the jump mechanic, though. Like the jump mechanic, and then you have the horse. Torrent.
I mean, look, platforming has never been good in any of these games, and I've only played two, so I feel like I can definitively make that statement without any controversy. But jumping did help. But yes, Bloodborne released to critical acclaim, sold really well, ended up making the PlayStation Hits catalog.
Yep.
And we saw some expansions. So tell us about the Old Hunters. Now, in terms of DLC, is this like continuation DLC?
So, okay, when you get to the cathedral where the good boy is, the good guy, where he's like, hey, just make sure bring people here and hang out, right?
Yes.
If you walk out to the left where the two guys who look like the Undertaker dressed in white are, there's a gravestone there, and with that gravestone it will transport you to the DLC. When you're there, you fight some of the great beings, some of the creatures. You fight the Orphan of Chaos, or the Orphan of Cause, which is one of the hardest and best boss fights in any Souls game. Mm. And if you've beaten it, you understand how much respect I have for you right now. Every single one of you out there. I beat him on my third try. No big deal. the DLC is great. It just adds a little bit more lore to the world, some unanswered questions that you might have had prior, and it also gives you more story. It gives you more side quests that you can do. It gives you much more creative creatures. You're like, how can things get even more hideous than what we've just experienced? Oh, here you go. Miyazaki's like, don't worry, I got you. I have a messed up brain.
Delightful. Yeah. Delightful. Well, in addition to a DLC expansion, this also got a tabletop board game. We're bringing it all back around. Yeah. And is it in the Elephant Graveyard? Hang on.
I don't have it. But I do have this.
Oh, show this off. What's right? Oh, look at this. We get to pull right from the collection.
Right from the collection. This is the Bloodborne graphic novel series, which I actually have all the volumes are included in this that breaks through. It's an entire graphic novel.
Have you actually read it, or did you just buy it and not?
I just bought it.
It's sealed.
Yeah, includes the three exclusive art covers, graphic novels, volume 1 through 3. I think there is a volume 4 out there right now, too. But that is the first.
Look at that.
I feel like we're on like a talk show right now. It's like, this is my book. I hope you read it.
Store in Barnes & Noble now.
Yeah. So yeah, the Bloodborne graphic novel is amazing. There's a card game that's out there. There's also the tabletop board game, which you can, all the expansions are the different areas of the game that you can go to. There's also a Kickstarter Chalice Dungeon set that you can get too.
Like a board game.
Yeah.
Interesting. So yeah, they're doing
more. It's an add-on to the main board game.
Okay.
You can get that at JPP.
Well, when are we going to go there?
Here's
a question for you.
Yes.
So Bloodborne was, in terms of like setting and presentation, a big departure from the whole kind of like knights and dragons, medieval fantasy tropes.
Yep.
Do you think if Bloodborne had flopped, From Software would not have started getting a little bit more open and experimental? Like, does Sekiro exist if Bloodborne wasn't a success? Does Elden Ring get a little bit more unconventional? You know, like, what? Tell me, in your opinion, how much did this kind of help the future of this kind of type of game?
So the problem that I think we had with, I don't even think it was a problem, but it's one thing that From Software had is Dark Souls 2. Dark Souls 2, that was their stumble.
I heard it's the bad one.
But it's not bad as in, like, it's the only one that Miyazaki's not attached to. They were like, hey, Dark Souls 1 did amazing. Let's make a sequel. And Miyazaki said, no, I don't want to. And they're like, well, fuck you. We're going to do it ourselves then. And they made it. And you can just tell that it just feels different. It's just not the same that all the other Dark Souls were. Miyazaki is like, well, you guys are doing this. I'm going to make Bloodborne. And that's like, it was one of those things, like, he already had this planned out. Like you even said, he wanted to make this particular game.
Yeah.
So if he put his heart and soul into it, like he did for Demon's Souls and Dark Souls 1, it's going to be good. And then he was like, you know what? I got a great idea for Dark Souls 3. And he went and released Dark Souls 3. And Dark Souls 3 is one of the best Souls games ever. It is a great continuation to the Dark Souls 1 story. Completely blocks out Dark Souls 2. But it's great to see, though, that Miyazaki is a modern-day genius when it comes to gaming and storytelling. Whether it's you figuring out the game for yourself, or the world and lore for yourself, or if it's just an amazing immersive world-driven game that he's doing, because, you know, Demon's Souls had the two different, the night and day worlds that you had to go through. Dark Souls 1 is just a traditional Souls game. Dark Souls 3, sequel to that. Bloodborne is what we just discussed here. Sekiro is a completely different style of gameplay too. That's so much more fast paced and more. Okay. That's Sekiro is you need to attack first, no matter what. Like, you are an aggressive attacker. You act like the boss almost, where you just constantly just come at everything, just throwing lefts and rights. But one thing I wanted to talk about, and this is a conversation for Elden Ring that I have.
Oh, sure.
I really wish Elden Ring would have been the Avengers almost of the Souls games.
Like, you wanted characters to come together from each of the games?
So I wanted, like, you have your traditional knight, which would have been your Dark Souls, right? You could have had your rogue or whatnot, who could have played very similar to your character in Bloodborne. You could have had the gun. You could have had the other weapons. Then you could have played as the samurai, which would have played very similar to Sekiro.
But see, just what I know about Sekiro, the fact that it kind of doesn't evolve around, like, grappling and stuff.
It's world traversing, yes.
Yeah, so I feel like you have to deal with the fact that the world has to be designed for the traversal styles of each character, which is where it kind of, I could see it getting a little problematic.
I'm not even talking about, I'm just talking about the fighting mechanics, though, right? Because, like, at the beginning of the game, you get to pick as a samurai is one of your options.
Yeah.
Like, why couldn't it play and be just like Sekiro. Like, I think that would have been cool, and I
because
think
because the game would have gotten delayed even longer. That's then you would have been like, no,
yeah. But for what we got, like, I'm not upset. But let's continue with the Bloodborne play. Spook meter.
This is a game that it's, I mean, unsettling. I said that's my qualification.
Yep.
So some of the creature designs in this are very unsettling, very fucked up in good
and,
way.
You and know, you didn't even see half of them yet.
But the ones I saw, man, they were good. So I would say this is a 3.5 on
okay.
the spook meter.
Okay.
Yeah. What about you?
This goes right to a 10 for me.
Over 5 and to a 10. Okay.
Yep. No. This is a 5. It's the highest score that I can give it. I think this game is terrifying at times. I think the world is unsettling. I think there's just things in this game that should never be in games. It really does feel like there's particular parts where you go to a nightmare world and everything looks like it should be in a nightmare.
Okay.
It's so creepy and unsettling. I didn't even talk about Keenhurst Manor, which is a completely optional area of the game, very similar to this Consecrated Snowfield.
Oh, so it's shit. Okay.
Yeah. but it is a completely different area that has some of the hardest bosses and some of the hardest enemies in the game too. This game has beaten me down and has made me respect the Souls games so much that I beat it 3 times in a week because I just couldn't stop playing it. It's just fantastic. It is good and everyone should play it. And with that, I'm going to say this is a 100% complete. This is a master of this game. So Tom, skip, play, complete or master.
Sorry, Josh. This was a skip from me and I don't know.
Even after we just talked about the lore and you're just saying like,
well, apparently I can just go on YouTube. I don't got to play the game.
I know.
It's a skip because again, for me, if you're coming into a game and you want something with this much presentation to have the kind of at least story stakes that encourage you to go through it, it doesn't have it, at least up front. And you know, I play games to escape homework. I don't want to do homework on top of it. So I'm sorry. I'm having fun with Elden Ring though.
I was gonna say, after Elden Ring, would you give it another shot?
Probably not because of the restrictions. Like it's like, you know, I can't jump.
I get that.
The pairing was cool. Maybe Josh. Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe.
All right.
I'll never say never.
But let us know.
Except
what
on
you
Until Dawn.
Let us know what you think of Bloodborne, because I think it's one of the best games of all time. It is right now.
You're going to do your top 5 on this.
I know. I can't give it a top 5.
Oh.
I got to save it for the game the end
there
of the year.
There are people who waited until the... No, I thought your top 5 of all time, personally.
Yes. I got to save it for the end of the year.
Oh, because you have to figure out where Elden Ring goes.
Yes.
Okay.
Because if I spoil Elden Ring right now in my list, that could spoil our Game of the Year episode. And I don't even need to be a part of it. It's just going to be Tom talking for an hour by himself. We don't want that. But let us know what you think of Bloodborne. Tell me everything that I got wrong with the lore, because I love the read as much as possible.
Tell me to get good.
Yes. Tell Tom to get good. Tell Tom to beat Elden Ring too. Come on, he's had the game for like almost a month.
I
now.
Really hope by the time this episode drops that I have it beaten, because I can't take the heartbreak of Radagon too much longer.
Yeah, but until next time, this has been Josh
and I'm Tom,
and we will see you when you have enough insight. Have a great one, everyone.
While we boot up the Triflex capacitor, please take some time to subscribe to the show and leave us a review wherever you listen. This show is nothing without you, and any support helps.
If you want to connect with us and discuss the past, present, or future of gaming, check out Bad Elephant Gaming on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And don't forget to watch our other videos on YouTube, where we bring you gaming experiences you'll never forget.
We also have a Twitch channel where we play games for the show and for fun. Come chat with us anytime at twitch.tv/badelephantgaming.
Thanks for listening.
And until next time, we'll see you in the future.